Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hi, how you doing? You ready for a firecracker day? Huh? I damn sure am. I love fireworks. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I love fireworks? I really do like them. For Nova M founders, new video up at NovaMRadio.com. Go to the podcast for members. We just put it up this morning, I think, maybe this afternoon, and it is very dramatic. And I think you'll just absolutely love it. We, in getting the program ready tonight, I got hung up because I had to watch three or four times Vanity Fair's Christopher Hitchens undergoing waterboarding. The backstory is Vanity Fair, one of the editors at Vanity Fair, asked Hitchens to actually undergo waterboarding and then write about it. And he said he would do it. And he has written a piece regarding what happened to him. But there's a video up. We have a link to it up at our website. Is it up yet, Kathy? It's up right now. And if you look at this thing, I think you're going to be very surprised, just in case American torturers have been revealed to have taken their cues from that model of moral clarity that was the Chinese communist regime, just in case that hasn't fully convinced you that the process is unquestionably, incontrovertibly evil. So writes Jason Linkins at the Huffington Post today. Christopher Hitchens' column in the August issue of Vanity Fair, entitled "Believe Me, It's Torture," ought to drive it home. Now, he writes about it, but you can go look at this video now. In the video, Hitchens is brought hooded and bound into what looks like a storage room. He's placed on a board, just a plank. I don't know, maybe a 4x8 plank, slightly elevated at the feet. He's instructed by masked interrogators. Everybody in this thing has hoods over their heads, and they have gloves on. But he's told how to call a halt to what they're about to do to him, either through a safe word, and for Hitchens, that word is red. At any point that he says red, the whole thing stops. Hitchens releasing what's referred to as a dead man's handle. It's a metal object placed in each hand. Now, all he has to do is say red or release one or both of these metal objects, and everything stops immediately. Now, a towel is placed over his hooded face, and one of the interrogators begins pouring water on Hitchens' face from an ordinary-looking milk carton. I mean, it's a gallon jug. It's not a faucet. It's not a pressure hose. It's a gallon jug of water. And as Jason Linkins mentions in his report of this, the interrogators show no more aggression than you might than when you're watering a houseplant. In fact, the process looks so unremarkable that you begin to wonder if they aren't simply warming Hitchens up for something worse with this 1 gallon a milk jug. 17 seconds pass. And then Hitchens throws the dead man's handle. When the hood is removed, it is jarring to see how panic-stricken Christopher Hitchens looks. And in the video, Hitchens describes the experience. This is what he said, quote, "They told me that when I activated the dead man's handle, which is a simple process, you simply release something, let it go. I didn't do that. I practically, even though my hands were bound, as near as I could, I threw the thing out of my hand. I mean, I really wanted it to stop. And I could swear I shouted the code word, but apparently I hadn't. Everything completely goes on you when you're breathing water. You can't think about anything else. It would be bad enough if you did have something. Suppose if they wanted to know where a relative of yours was, or a lover. You feel, well, I'm going to betray them now because this has got to come to an end. I can't take this anymore. But what if you didn't have anything? What if they'd gotten the wrong guy? Then you would be in danger of losing your mind very quickly." End quote. To remind you of what's in Room 101 from 1984, the worst thing in the world for Winston Smith, it was a hungry, snarling rat. Now, that last paragraph, well, you know, what if they got the wrong guy? Well, you'd be in danger of losing your mind. You'll betray anybody or anything to make it stop. And coming from Christopher Hitchens, I realize he's an alcoholic, but coming from Christopher Hitchens, that's a pretty definitive statement. You would betray anybody. And those words are critical, especially considering the torture practices of the Chinese communists, especially during the Korean War. And we are now emulating them. These tortures were designed to elicit false confessions from those who were tortured. Do you understand this? Don't you remember? Sure you do. You remember. Any kind of confession. The Soviets used this tactic. The Chinese used this tactic. It doesn't matter if the confession is true or false. It is a confession. This is how you destroy an individual. This is what was done in 1984 in the novel. It doesn't make any difference what the confession is, whether it's true, false, something that the person being tortured pulls out of thin air. It doesn't matter. The confession is the goal, not the truth. The confession. And pay attention, if you look at this, to what Hitchens says about the aftermath of this event. He says, quote, as a result of this very brief experience, if I do anything that gets my heart rate up now, and I'm breathing hard or panting, I have a slight panic sensation that I'm not going to be able to catch my breath again. Lately, I've been having this feeling of waking up feeling smothered, trying to push everything off my face. End quote. So it only takes 17 seconds to ruin the life of an innocent man. 17 seconds. Jesus. And this is what we do now. This is what the highest ranking officers in the Justice Department made, through their own machinations, legal. This. Absolute, utter torture. You know, I got a couple of emails today from people who said they're worried, about, don't know what to do. And my answer can only be, yeah, well, you know, me too. Me too. A couple of emails before we get to the topics. This is from Roz, who writes, Mike, what is it with some hospitals, especially in the United States, Roz is in Canada, that makes them barbaric and staffed by uncaring, mean people? I refer to that lady who died on the floor of an emergency room with people coming in and out and looking at her for a good hour as though she were a curiosity. One nurse even gave her a little kick to see if she was alive. A doctor walked in, stared at her, and walked out. A security guard rolled over in his chair and leaned back to get a better look and then went back to what he was doing. What is happening to people? Are they so inured to the pain and suffering inflicted by their great country that they just shrug it off? God save me or any of my family from getting ill in one of those cursed so-called hospitals. Apparently you have to be clutching some kind of insurance in your hand before they will deign to even look at you. It's too disgusting for words. I'm so glad they're getting all this negative and unwanted publicity, and I hope they are thoroughly ashamed, the hospital people. Perhaps now they will get their acts together and start behaving like human beings. And you know what she's, Roz, thanks Roz, you know what she's referring to, and that is the that video that's out on, I'm sure it's on YouTube by now, of the woman who is in critical shape, falls down on her knees, then on the floor, and dies there. Nobody, no goddamn body. This is in a hospital emergency room, waiting room. Nobody in this country, nobody comes to her rescue. Nobody. That is unnerving. I mean, it really is unnerving when a nurse comes over, what appears to be a nurse, and kind of kicks her a little bit. You alive? This is Nova M Radio. Your peace with guns, your progress is in megatons. Left when the war is won, a soldier of a misfortune, a soldier of an angry call.
speakers, it'll be our secret.
It's about 21 past the hour. We also have some sound for you tonight from Manor Monkey. He gave a briefing today about the G8 meeting that's coming up in, where, Japan? Is it Japan? Yeah, okay. So we'll have a couple of sound bites from this freak as the situation in Afghanistan starts to spiral into another black hole of George Bush's creation. At the Malloy website today, this is what Kathy blogged about. You can check out her mini blog too. I'd normally do it, but every once in a while Kathy will take a shot and does pretty good. I'm not being patronizing. She does real good. This is from Leon in Texas. Mike, you have been pretty rough on Barack Obama the last couple of nights, but I would like to point this out to you. While I understand yours and many people's frustrations, I have to say this. As a black man, I understand that any black man running as a Democrat and depending on the white vote to win must run from the center. I do feel like once he is in office, he will move more to the left. He is a civil rights lawyer, so I have to believe that he knows the problem with the FISA agreement. And with the faith-based initiative, I do believe that he actually believes this. After all, his community work was done through churches. So he has seen what good the church can do. But I do have to say that black churches tend to be more tolerant. So that is where his view is coming from. Something else. Leon in Texas. Okay, well, I can understand Barack Obama's involvement when he was a community organizer or human rights organizer working through the churches. That's good. That's fine. But he has been a senator, and now he's about to become president. And once he becomes an officer of the United States government, then he's duty-bound, although the last couple of presidents have proved otherwise, especially the one we have now. Barack Obama, as president, is duty-bound to protect and defend the Constitution. And all I can say, Leon, is read the First Amendment. And maybe read some of the Federalist Papers about the wall of separation between church and state. Wall. It doesn't say a wall of separation except when it comes to using tax dollars handed out to religious organizations to do things that government is perfectly capable of doing, or an atheist or humanist organization would do a hell of a lot better, because there is no litmus test. If you do it through an atheist organization or a humanist organization or a non-religious organization, there's no question as to the sanctity of the person standing in front of you if he or she happens to be gay. If you go to most evangelical Christian denominations where most of this money is filtered, then you are condemned for being gay. Oh, well, don't condemn the sinner, Mike. We just condemn the sin. Oh, blow it out your nose. So I'm sorry, Leon. I understand what you're saying. I really do. But do you know what I really think about Barack Obama? Let me tell you something about this race thing. And I got to believe this. I believe it. It's happened. He has transcended the race issue. He's transcended it. So now, God, I hear the laughter out there. When you write, Leon, in your email that, you know, as a black man running for president, he's got, and depending on the white vote, he's got to run from the center. That may be true, but this faith-based initiative crap is not a center from which he needs to run. He's got to talk to people about jobs. He's got to talk to them about General Motors is about to go belly up. He's got to talk to them about two and possibly three wars the psychopath in the White House has gotten us into. He's got to talk about the degrading environment, 1,000 wildfires in California, food prices spiraling out of control. Faith-based initiatives, my ass, why are we even talking about that? It's not an issue. When your house is burning down and it's ready to collapse, unless you're a religious psychopath, you don't run back inside to get the family Bible. You don't. So, sorry, Leon. I just can't buy your argument. This is from Kate. Dear Mike, just heard a caller say that Obama is the only choice we have. Why? Because the communication corporations tell us so? Because he won the media beauty pageant? We haven't even had the convention yet. Isn't it possible, not probable, I would give you, but possible to correct our course if necessary at the convention? If not, why have it? To pull even more middle-class money into this tumor of a campaign, it is devouring what little information there was. You ask, why are people, Americans, boomers, just passively observing our own demise? Perhaps it is because as children of the atom bomb, who grew up in the shadow of a nuclear tomb, we've always known our fate was doom. Of course, Kate writes, I could be wrong. Happy 4th of July to you and all. Take care, Kate. You people are driving me crazy. All right, more when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Mola. This is Nova M Radio.
Fear of state religion, that's not what we're going for. We don't want for one governmental religion. Government will never, you know, say this is the religion. We're free from society for religion.
That's me in the spot.
It's about 25 before the hour. A couple more emails here. You guys are just too good. That's why read these to you. This is from Prairie 2. He wrote it today. Hey, Mike, the stock market took another big hit today on the news that General Motors could tank any minute. How does that saying go? What's good for GM is good for the country? Well, that was, you know, back in the 50s. Prairie 2 goes on. Things are looking so bad that the Bush crime family has trotted out the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to basically say that the whole bomb Iran thing is, well, never mind. Even Chuckle-Nuts is out talking that line, saying, quote, I prefer to solve this with democracy, diplomacy, end quote. Since when? The Secretary of the Treasury is making the rounds in Europe, trying to reassure them that the Bush crime family has a handle on the banking crisis. The captain of the Titanic has a handle on the deck chair problem. With the unexpected farm crisis, probably shouldn't have shredded the reports on global warming, huh? Things are spiraling out of control so fast that they may not be able to hand it off to President Obama. Meanwhile, Obama is moving to grab as much as a third of the evangelical base out from under the Republicans. Fed up with being paid lip service by Republicans and then getting no funding for their charities and ridiculed behind their backs, the evangelicals are poised to switch sides. Obama's proposals on faith-based initiatives are no different from what the government has been doing since Lyndon Johnson started giving them money. Chucklenuts, though, threw away the book, the rule book, and fired the accountant so that he could hand out several billion in bribes to use churches to fix elections, a practice that did not play well with the Jimmy Carter-style evangelicals that Obama is courting. This could work, but I wouldn't stop squirreling away jars of peanut butter. Well, something better work. Huh? Oh, and by the way, the American Atheists, you can reach them at atheist.org or AmericanAtheistSingular.org. They have issued a press release. It says, the American Atheists, which defends civil rights and the separation of church and state today, criticized Barack Obama for his support of the Bush faith-based initiatives. Obama pledged to expand the federal funding scheme, which under Mr. Bush has given over $1.2 billion in taxpayer money to churches, mosques, temples, and other religious groups to operate so-called faith-based social programs. Frank Zindler, acting president of the atheists said that Obama was, quote, horse trading the constitutional separation of government and religion for votes, end quote. He went on to say, quote, this makes it official. The Democrats are trying to outdo their Republican colleagues in using religion and the lure of more taxpayer money to turn houses of worship into voting blocks. Obama wants to continue the discriminatory policy of taxing millions of atheists, freethinkers, humanists, and other Americans who profess no religious beliefs and give that money to organized religion. That's unfair, it's discriminatory, and it endangers our First Amendment freedom, end quote. David Silverman, communications director for American Atheists, said that the Obama pledge to continue Bush's programs is a risky economic and social experiment. He says, quote, the faith-based initiative allows religious groups to use our money in programs that are poorly monitored, have little or no accountability, and drain resources from their more effective secular counterparts. This is pandering to religious groups and offers the lure of free government cash in exchange for political support, end quote. Well, leave it to the atheists to come out against God, huh? Bless their hearts. From Mike in Phoenix, who is a veteran. Mike, I heard today on another radio program, that would be yesterday, that the Republicans are attacking Michelle Obama once again, and this time because she had grammatical errors on her master's degree thesis. What a joke these people are. Perhaps they would do better if they attacked John McCain, the son and grandson of Navy admirals who could do no better than rank 894th out of a class of 899 in his graduating class at Annapolis. Well, McCain was a punk. McCain was a playboy, you know, a happy ass, kind of a George Bush without the family connections. Yeah, he graduated almost to the bottom of his class at Annapolis. He crashed airplanes. The only reason he was in the military was because his father shamed him into it, his grandfather and his father. I mean, what's the guy going to do? You know, you have a World War One dude and World War Two dude, and the World War Two dude slid into the Vietnam thingy, and here comes happy ass John McCain, who just wants to go drink and smoke and get laid. That's all he cares about. Sort of like George Bush, but without the huge family history of being pro-Nazi. So he winds up graduating near the bottom of his class, goes in the military, screws up as much as he can, gets away with it. Anyone else would have been court-martialed for destruction of government property. You know that as well as I do. You don't keep a half-ass like this and give him the controls of an F-16 or F-14, whatever the hell we were flying 40 years ago, to go kill brown people. You don't let them just continue to crash aircraft. So they send him up with a squadron to go bomb civilians, and he gets shot down. And he serves 5 years in a North Vietnamese prison where he claims he was tortured. They claim he wasn't. He gets out, comes home, divorces his wife, marries a beer heiress, and now wants to be president? And that's a war hero. No, it isn't. It's a jerk. Playboy. War hero. Christ. But I digress. Danny writes in, Mike, new word to describe the last 8 years of Bush. Now, I came up with one that I shared with you the other night called anticipointment, but Danny has one here called disastrophe. Disastrophe! He writes, disaster or catastrophe just can't get it done alone, so in an unprecedented bipartisan effort, the two have combined to form disastrophe. However, lobbyists may convince Bush to veto it in favor of what they feel is a more fitting term, pimpology, the science of turning the U.S. into a nation of 300 million whores, no disrespect to sex workers. They've got us all working for peanuts while the corporate pimps get rich. Danny. I like that, disastrophe. And this one got lost in the stack, and I wanted to share it with you. It comes from Dave in Brooklyn. Another way the Republicans support the troops is the subject line. And Dave writes, voting against the improved benefits and sending them to die and kill for lies, oil, and empire aren't the only ways Republicans support the troops. They also display the photos of the often incredibly young dead outside their Washington offices on ever bigger easels, yearbook style. Our soldiers died to provide so-called patriotic decor to congressional doorways. I was just in Washington yesterday, Dave writes, lobbying for impeachment and saw this disgrace in hallway after cavernous hallway, floor after floor in all three House buildings. Not that this is anything new. They've used our war dead like this for years. Takes my breath away every time I see it. Complete, well, I can't say that, blankings. Dave, Brooklyn. Yeah, they're ghouls. The Republican Party, the members of the Republican Party who are in the House and the Senate are truly ghouls. They are eaters of the dead. And if the dead are still squirming, they will kill them and then eat them. They're just vile. I can't believe we have a party like this. I mean, the Democratic Party, as corporate infiltrated as it is, still has a vein or a flash of humanity to it. It does. It's still there. It hasn't been totally lobotomized like the Republican Party. But you look at these next time Mitch McConnell or Orrin Hatch or Jim Inhofe or any of these Republicans, the next time they open their mouths and start talking, I defy you to locate a spark of humanity in their persona, their demeanor, their language. They're not human. They're Republicans. Am I through with the emails? Oh, last one. This is from Prairie 2. This came in yesterday. Iran has purchased a large number of the Russian SA-20 anti-aircraft missiles to be fully deployed by year's end, state-of-the-art even by U.S. standards. This would signal that an attack would have to happen by early fall if Israel were to go alone without the U.S. providing suppression fire. Israel has acquired seven aging 707s aircraft set up for mid-air refueling, and this would limit the number of aircraft they could launch to under 100. Depending on how roundabout an approach they take, perhaps much less than that. Even if they go now without direct U.S. support, they would lose many aircraft, and since the target list is estimated at least 50, they probably wouldn't have much effect other than to really piss off the Iranians. Oh, don't you hate this? Don't you just want to go out tomorrow or Friday and eat some potato salad and hope you don't get ptomaine poisoning? Did you read the thing in Science Times? Mayonnaise has been given a bad name where it concerns summer dishes. You can do mayonnaise and don't worry about getting sick. It's got acetic acid in it, vinegar, and it just beats the living Christ out of those little bugs that can get in your picnic food.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, Cindy writes in about where the faith-based money went in her town. She writes, in the town of Longview, Washington, the faith-based money came in big time. Three churches applied and got a big chunk. Seventh-day Adventists built a super church on the freeway with seating for tens of thousands. Catholics built a new hospital that nobody will go to because they don't support women's rights, and it's a Democratic community. Baptists build a gigantic superchurch and daycare indoctrination center that fits thousands. Meanwhile, our food pantries are empty and our homeless shelters are full with people waiting on the streets. So where's the charity, Mike? Cindy. Well, you know my take on all that. We mentioned a week, 10 days ago, about Major General Antonio Taguba, U.S. Army retired, who led the Army's official investigation into the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse scandal and testified before Congress on his findings way back in May of 2004. Can you believe it? 4 years ago. And then he was fired. Oh, excuse me. He took retirement. The preface to his 130-page report, or not his, it's by Physicians for Human Rights. The preface was written by General Taguba. It says, this report tells the largely untold story of what happened to detainees in our custody when the commander-in-chief and those under him authorized a systematic regime of torture. This story is not only written in words, it is scrawled for the rest of these individuals' lives on their bodies and minds. Our national honor is stained by the indignity and inhumane treatment these men received from their captors. The profiles of these former detainees, none of whom ever were charged with a crime or told why they were detained, are tragic and brutal rebuttals to those who claim that torture is ever justified. Through the experiences of these men in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo, we can see the full scope of the damage this illegal and unsound policy has inflicted, both on America's institutions and our nation's founding values, which the military, intelligence services, and our justice system are duty-bound to defend. In order for these individuals to suffer the wanton cruelty to which they were subjected, a government policy was promulgated to the field whereby the Geneva Conventions and the Uniform Code of Military Justice were disregarded. The UN Convention Against Torture was indiscriminately ignored, and the healing professions, including physicians and psychologists, became complicit in the willful infliction of harm against those the Hippocratic Oath demands they protect. After years of disclosures by government investigations, media accounts, and reports from human rights organizations, there is no longer any doubt as to whether the current administration has committed war crimes. The only question that remains to be answered is whether those who ordered the use of torture will be held to account. The former detainees in this report, each of whom is fighting a lonely and difficult battle to rebuild his life, require reparations for what they endured, comprehensive psychosocial and medical assistance, and even an official apology from our government. But most of all, these men deserve justice as required under the tenets of international law and the United States Constitution. And so do the American people. Signed, Major General Antonio Taguba, U.S. Army, retired. God. Sheila sent that to me about a week ago, and I know we quoted from it when we talked about the report being released, but the full impact of that statement. I feel like I'm reading about or learning things from Idi Amin's regime in Uganda from 40 years ago. Or from Botha's regime in South Africa from 40 years ago. I mean, this is us. This is America. This is the United States of America. Have you gone to my website and clicked on the link and taken a look at that Christopher Hitchens video? And Hitchens was, as you can tell by the video, he's got quite a gut on him, doesn't he? Oh, God. He is not underfed. He hasn't been tortured yet. He hasn't been starved. He hasn't been hung by his arms. He hasn't been deprived of anything, as you can tell by his gut. He has not been sensorily deprived. He hasn't had white noise beamed at him all night. He is just coming in as a magazine writer and laying down on a table after being hooded and shackled to the table, the water torture begins. And 17 seconds into it, he almost dies of a heart attack. The word on the street is that some of these tactics were picked up by the CIA from returning POWs after the Korean War. New York Times reports that the military trainers who came to Guantanamo in December 2002 based an entire interrogation class on a chart showing the effects of coercive management techniques for possible use on prisoners, including blah, 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 blah. What the trainers did not say was that their chart had been copied verbatim from a 1957 Air Force study of Chinese communist techniques used during the Korean War to obtain confessions, many of them false, from American prisoners. You know, why do I talk about this every night? To depress you? No, I can't make you depressed. You know, only you can make yourself depressed. But I guess because I'm in such a state of shock that we have turned into this. And we're all rejecting it. I know you're rejecting it. So am I. Denial, denial, denial. That's a great ego defense mechanism. I do not live in a country that has state-sanctioned torture against anybody who happens to fall into the maw of the current regime. I don't live there. I don't live there. I don't live there. Yes, we do. Wish you were here. It's about 7 past the hour. You are here. Chinese methods of torturing American prisoners of war during the Korean War in order to elicit false confessions. That's all any totalitarian regime is interested in, whether it is communist or something from fiction, like the regime of Big Brother or the Bush crime family. It doesn't make any difference whether the confession is true. Truth is not the objective. The confession is the objective, because then the confession becomes the ends to the hideous means being employed by the totalitarian regime, right? We all know this is not, you know, this is how to screw up the world 101. This is not complex stuff. But I just never thought we would do it. I really didn't. Okay, so these dumbasses in the Bush crime family and the Republicans sit around and mouth breathe while 24 is on Fox, the Fox channel. Fox, what is it called? Not Fox News, Fox Television, whatever. Well, what if you have a prisoner who has planted a dirty nuke? Gonna kill millions of people. Well, all right, thousands. Would you torture him then? It's a TV show. Scott Shane writing, The Times says, the recycled chart, the one that the Air Force snagged in 1957 after our armistice was signed with the North Koreans, and we found out what the Chinese who were operating with the North Koreans, what they had done to some of our POWs. You know, it must have been a real shock. It really must have been a shock. They did that? Remember the movie The Manchurian Candidate? Well, of course you do. Anyway, the recycled chart that the Air Force found is the latest and most vivid evidence of the way communist interrogation methods that the United States long described as torture became the basis for interrogations, both by the military at the base in Guantanamo and by the CIA. The Chinese. The Chi-Coms. Do you know, I think Bush's grandfather a few years ago was the CEO of the Chinese-American, or the U.S.-Chinese, whatever it was, Chamber of Commerce. The Bush regime, the Bush family, the bloodline, loves to suck around dictators and totalitarians. It doesn't make any difference if they are national socialists like Hitler or communists like the regime in China. It doesn't make any difference. They love them. They love them. What was that Bush quote? It'll be a little bit easier if it was a dictator. Remember that, Kathy? You don't have to, you don't have to listen to anybody. You just, if they don't do it, shoot them. Gordon in Oklahoma writes regarding Christopher Hitchens' video that's out. I've always appreciated, he writes, the powerful arguments Hitchens elegantly articulates against theism. I also find myself in disagreement with Hitchens' support of the Bush-Cheney foreign policies, which are war and devastation. For Hitchens, a Bush apologist to pronounce that waterboarding is in fact torture should cause even the most devout skeptic pause. It is only fair to ask how long before waterboarding and other torture techniques will be coming to a neighborhood near you. One danger inherent in such techniques is that no physical marks are left. It will be only the victim's word against the perpetrators. Gordon. Well, another inherent danger is that the viral qualities of this kind of activity. Take a look. Anytime, the next time some poor son of a bitch in your city locks himself in a house, gets everybody out, except maybe his mother-in-law, and he's in there with a loaded gun, and he uses his cell phone, he calls his ex-wife or his current wife or his girlfriend or his somebody, and he says, I'm going to kill the bitch, and then I'm going to commit suicide. Arrgh! And watch what happens, because your local television channels, all three of them, will cover this from dawn till dusk to dawn to dusk to dawn until somebody's dead. But the thing to watch for is the arrival of the SWAT team, the Special Weapons and Tactics team. Son of a bitch, when they open the back of that huge truck and out comes an entire squad of black-clad, helmeted, I mean, they have backpacks, they have flares, they have flashlights, they've got hand grenades, they've got guns, rifles, knives, fish-gutting equipment, they've got everything, helmets, visors, gloves, AK-47s. To get this poor bastard locked in the house, either with his mother-in-law or by himself, who's threatening suicide. Now, where did that come from? The militarization of our local police departments. You know, when I was a kid, there was Officer Friendly. Son of a bitch! Officer Friendly! Huh? Somebody would screw up in the neighborhood, break into a house, steal hubcaps, or threaten to kill his mother-in-law, whatever. And the cops would show up. Three cars. Guys would get out with those cloth hats on, you know, the five-pointed hats and a badge and a bullhorn. Mr. Davis, come out of the house now. And if he really didn't, they might lob in a tear gas canister. But now, it's like a goddamn assault on some island in the Sea of Japan in the 40s. Here they come! Get him! And the way they creep around this militarized police force. I mean, this is so stupid, guys. You think, I don't know, what do you do? Before you come out, do you stand in front of the mirror and put this stuff on? You know, it's high noon, and these people put on camo faces. Because some guy is in a house threatening to kill his old lady or his mother-in-law and commit suicide. Or not threatening to kill his mother-in-law. Maybe he's just holding her as a hostage. The militarization of the police department. Where did that come from? Well, obviously the military. So, as Gordon points out, there are some inherent dangers here, and one of them is this viral spread of waterboarding. Now, it's a known fact that the police department in Chicago, used torture techniques so many times to get confessions out of people. Confessions that sent them to death row. And it wasn't until journalism classes at Northwestern University took on these cases and found that the whole damn story was a lie. And then the people were freed, not because of a technicality, but because they were innocent to begin with. So, police departments that torture, please, it's not a news flash. But police departments that torture like this will be. You want a confession? Leave him in the room with me. Who are you?
I work for a private security agency. And me and my three friends here will take care of this. What do you want him to confess to? Give us a list.
Yeah. These are dangerous times. They really are dangerous times. I hope nobody listening to this program, especially you people with all these lefty bumper stickers like war is unhealthy to children and oh God, that is so old. What's the one I've got on the on my pickup truck? What does that say? War is not the answer from the Friends Legislative Committee Against the War, whatever. The time's going to come when a bumper sticker like that will cause you to be pulled over, and some smart alecky cop is going to get fresh with you, and there's going to be words exchanged, and then you're going to be arrested for resisting an officer, and the next thing you know, your ass is being taken into a subterranean chamber where people are waiting for you with hoods over their heads.
Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century.
No, I've always, you know, a dictatorship would be a heck of a lot easier. There's no question about it.
As long as you're the dictator, right?
I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want
a
wave.
A former CIA operative. Now, that can be anything. That can be somebody who does wet work, that's assassinations, or it can be someone who pushes a pencil at a desk at Langley. A former CIA operative who says he tried to warn the agency about faulty intelligence on Iraqi weapons programs now says CIA officials are also ignoring evidence that Iran has suspended work on a nuclear bomb. He's a one-time undercover agent, according to the Washington Post, who's been barred by the CIA from using his real name. Christ. He filed a motion in federal court last Friday asking the government to declassify legal documents describing what he says was a deliberate suppression of findings on Iran that were contrary to agency views at the time. A deliberate suppression of the truth because the CIA preferred the lies. We can get you to confess to anything. The truth is not the objective. The confession is. Now, this former CIA operative alleged in a lawsuit from 4 years ago that the CIA fired him after he over and over again clashed with his senior managers over the attempts to file reports, his attempts to file reports that challenged the conventional wisdom about weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. Key details of his claim, you see, have not been made public and probably never will be because they describe events the CIA says are secret. Shh, 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 shh. Now, the consensus view, of course, of Iran's nuclear program changed last December with the release of this landmark intelligence report, this NIE, that concluded that Iran halted work on nuclear weapons design in 2003. That undermined the CIA's rationale for censoring this former officer's lawsuit, according to his attorney, a guy named Roy Krieger. Krieger says, quote, on five occasions, he was ordered by the CIA to either falsify his reporting on weapons of mass destruction in the Near East or not to file his reports at all, end quote. Ordered to falsify. We are not interested in the truth. We are interested in the confession. In court documents, the former CIA officer contends that his 22-year career collapsed after he questioned CIA doctrine about the nuclear programs of Iraq and Iran. He is and was, during his time with the CIA, a fluent speaker of both Farsi and Arabic. He had been assigned undercover work in the Persian Gulf region, where he successfully recruited informants with access to sensitive information about Iran's nuclear program, according to his attorney. And it goes on and on and on. A CIA spokesman, Paul Gamigliano, declined to comment on the specifics of the case. You know, it's an ongoing investigation. But flatly rejected the allegation that the CIA had suppressed reports. He said, quote, it would be wrong to suggest that agency managers direct their officers to falsify the intelligence they collect or to suppress it for political reasons. That's not our policy. That's not what we're about. End quote. Oh, okay. Email from Brad in Phoenix, who writes, Mike, you asked a while ago why Democrats are more hesitant to embrace the far-left ideology than Republicans are to embrace the far-right ideology or something like that. I believe liberals like myself, and most people for that matter, are more inclusive as opposed to conservatives who tend to be more exclusive. You see, liberals, to their credit, include those that may hold divergent views to their own, thus enriching their experience in offering an alternative path, not necessarily better, but an alternative. Conservatives tend to engage in groupthink and are far too inflexible to serve any real good for the people. This is probably a poor excuse, but it does seem to fit the ideology of each. Brad. I would take it one step further. The Republican Party is comprised of people who are terrified. They're afraid of their neighbors. They're afraid of their children. They're afraid of foreigners. They're afraid of dark-skinned people. They're afraid of Islamic terrorists coming to eat their children. They're afraid of that they're going to burn in hell when they die. They're afraid of dying. They're afraid of everything. Everything. The average Republican is a walking vault of squirming, gasping fear. Democrats, on the other hand, don't, for the most part, have that problem.
Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puffy. Yep, 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 yep. They need to shut their yaps. The big dog's over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Bill O'Reilly, Devo System.
It is the calling of our time to rid the world of terror. That's our calling. It's the calling of the 21st century. And it's a calling that we will not tire for. It's a calling that we will keep in our minds.
Jesus Christ. It's 25 before the hour. What was that? What was that, Kathy? Was that the President of the United States? Good God. We're coming to your phone calls here in just a minute, but I want to get Pete's email in here from Portland. Pete from Portland. Portland Pete, we used to call him. He writes, "Hi, Mike, you're an atheist. I'm an agnostic, but 90% of the people are theists." He's writing about works-based versus faith-based activities. Pete writes, "I do recall that there is a distinction between those who believe that faith alone will get them salvation and those who believe that faith without works is meaningless. The argument seems to go all the way back to Saul of Tarsus, St. Paul, and James, the brother of Jesus. There is even some evidence in the Dead Sea Scrolls to indicate that the argument was going on even before that. Evangelicals are in the faith alone group. Catholics are in the faith plus works group. The Hindus call it ahimsa. All religions have some form of service. My point is that the current Office of Faith-Based Whatever has been supporting faith-alone groups. And this idea of Obama's is to redirect the funds to the ones who are actually doing service work. I think it was really just kickbacks to evangelicals for helping to preempt democracy. Now it will become a distribution of funds based on actual performance. The McChurches will just have to beg for more money from the shills who punch the clock once a week, buying the stairway, as they say. I must have missed it in his speech when you say he will allow them, Obama will allow them to restrict their hiring within their own faith, i.e., no gays. I thought he said that if someone received federal funding, they would be subjected to federal hiring laws. Well, it is certainly going to be interesting listening to you during the coming years." Pete, Portland. If that may be a distinction without a difference. I don't know. I don't know what Obama's trying to do. If he's trying to murder the Republican Party, then by God, say anything. Say anything! I don't care! Say it, Obama! Go! Go! If he's trying to wind up with a veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate, do it! But God help you if you take that kind of power the wrong way, dude. We know how to handle people like that now. Tyrants. We're not doing it, but we know how. Oh, maybe we don't. Oh, never mind. Never mind. I don't know what Barack Obama is trying to do, but if you really listen to the words, which I don't, and most people don't, you know, we skim across the tops of the letters in each sentence and boom, and wind up thinking, well, God, did he really say that? Maybe that's what Barack Obama is saying. Maybe he's saying, yes, we will continue the faith-based programs, but from here on, they will not be what George Bush has made them. They will be programs that really accomplish things. He's not all that hard to do. I've got to get the way he bites off the last letter of each word at the end of the sentence, you know. But I get your point. I get your point. Thanks for writing. You want to do some phone calls? Yeah, let's do some phone calls. In the video that's up right now, our weekly video at Nova M Radio for the founding members, I read from a letter. I got four or five letters this week. I read from a letter written by a woman who said that, you know, I'm just, what was it, dramatic, like her 13-year-old daughter and their friends.
Oh, shut up. You so are not.
You know, there's so much drama. Do you ever not talk like that? Actually, ma'am, no. This is just me. I don't know what to tell you. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius. Hey, Douglas.
Oh, my God, I'm first in line. Hi.
You are, yeah.
Okay.
You nervous?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I listened to a guy this last weekend. His name is George Lakoff, L-A-K-O-F-F.
Yeah, yeah, I know who it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've read his stuff many times, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised because he goes into this, why they vote against their best interests and all that stuff.
Right, uh-huh.
And have you read Don't Think of an Elephant?
I've not read that. I've read excerpts. I would think that probably most of the people who listen to this program are familiar with George Lakoff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought I was coming up with something new here because I hadn't heard of him before.
Oh.
His latest is The Political Mind. Why you can't understand 21st century American politics with an 18th century brain.
There you go.
And he goes into a lot more of the cognitive science of it, which I'm finding fascinating, but I'm just starting it, so I can't tell you much. But the business about frames,
mm-hmm,
and the strict father image that,
yeah,
Republicans use.
The way, absolutely. The framing of an issue, the reframing, the misframing, it's a fascinating topic. And when you read it, and all of a sudden, you have those aha moments, mm-hmm, when you're reading Lakoff, you go, well, I'll be damned.
I know. We need to get more of this out there or do more of this, get more of our own frames out.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Frames are all over the place. You were mentioning 24, for example.
Right.
The hero image, the strict father image.
Yes.
Real men torture, real men stand up to torture, real men die and come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in there.
Yeah, it is. I can remember, I was probably first introduced to Lakoff about 2 years ago. I think I was still with Air America, and somebody called in and sent me some links and yada yada, and I did some reading. And then had a couple of nights where the conversation drifted into George Lakoff and the idea of framing. I had never heard that term before,
mm-hmm,
until about 2 years ago. And again, after reading just a bare minimum of Lakoff, you begin to see the kind of job that's been done on us, on America, by especially the Republicans. It's astonishing. It's astonishing what they have done, and how willing we were to go along with it.
And our side is still just back in the 18th century, going on with facts and figures and thinking that's going to do it for us.
Right, and it's absolutely not.
It's
fascinating stuff, and I'm glad you brought it up again. Douglas, thanks. I appreciate it. George Lakoff, Lakoff. Now, I said most of the people listening to this program are probably familiar with his writings. If you're not, check it out. LaShonda is calling from Austin, listening on the Internet. Hey, LaShonda.
Hey, Mike. It's been a while again.
Well, not that long.
Not that long, yes.
Not that long. How are you?
I am doing good. I've been moonlighting as a stand-up comic, Mike.
You have?
I have.
Do you use harsh language?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't do sex jokes, and I don't do racial jokes. I don't make fun of the white people.
Why not?
Because Austin's only 12% black.
That's and, I got it.
And, you know, B, some of these people know where I live, so.
I hear that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. All right.
But I.
Well, wait a minute. How's that career going?
It's going good. I'm doing stand-up to fill up my gas tank. Like, let me tell some jokes and get some gas money. Ooh. It is. Oh, man, Mike. It's just so much going on tonight. I was listening to you talking.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many topics. It's ridiculous. And then I'm looking at the calendar. It's almost the 4th of July.
That's right.
And I'm sorry. I can't barbecue this year. I have nothing to celebrate.
Well, you can celebrate your family.
I could do that, but my husband got to work.
Well, that's true. That's true, too.
So, you know, it's just like all the symbolism, the flags and Uncle Sam and all this apple pie mess. You know, I'm not feeling it this year.
I know. It's been getting tiresome over the past 5 or 6 years. But now, with all the stuff that we know that has been going on, being perpetrated by those who were charged to defend the Constitution and all that's right with this country and turned it into all that's wrong with this country, it's going to be rough. That's why I keep, you know, Kathy and I have been talking about, well, we're going to go over here to Decatur, Georgia, on the 4th of July, and at about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, they're going to shoot off fireworks, which we love, but it's not going to have any kind of you know, none of that flag waving. I can't do it. Can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
It is. It's so bad. And the gas, I'm telling you, I called to talk about the Obama thing, but I just want to say this right fast before
okay.
I get cut off. The gas has affected so many people around me, including myself. It's not just what you're paying at the pump. I will just tell you a quick story. my condo that I'm living in now, I have to move because this lady wanted to buy it from my landlord so that she could be closer to work because she lived 40 miles outside the city. So now I got to move and find another place that's closer to my husband's job just because of the gas.
Well, how far away, I mean, how big a commute you work in the entertainment business, but I don't know what he does. I would imagine you work out of your home, right?
Yeah, I work from home.
Yeah, like we do.
Bus.
So does he have a big commute?
From where we stay, it's about 15 minutes. But every place that's close to his job, here's the other thing, they run a game in the real estate market now.
Yeah.
All these people can't afford to buy houses, so everybody is renting.
I mean,
everybody. It's like Who Wants to Find a Place to Live TV show.
Yeah.
And everybody's competing for, like, vaulted ceilings and 900 square feet.
Uh-huh.
And they want to charge you, like, $1,300 plus a $50 per person application fee. And there's, like, 12 people competing for it. You know they run a game.
That's called
and nobody's regulating this.
That's called disaster capitalism 102. Hey, LaShonda, hold on a minute. Let me do some commercials, and we'll come back.
Okay.
And tell me what you want to talk about Obama. Disaster capitalism. A lot of folks making a lot of money on the fact that a lot of the rest of us are just, you know, trying to. Did you read today that Rush Limbaugh signed a contract for almost $500 million?
I think we should eat him.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Well, I roamed and I rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. While all around me a voice was sounding, this land is made for you and me. This land is
justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 9 minutes before the hour. We're talking with LaShonda in Austin, Texas. All right, now, what about Senator Obama?
Senator Obama and the church people. I was talking to Ian a little bit about this, and here's my take on the Obama church thing.
Okay.
If he is really sincerely going to help out the church people, the ones that provide food and coats for kids and hooking up Narcotics Anonymous and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. type of churches, if he's going to help them, that they're going to use the money, that's great. I say go for it. But if he trying to appeal to them people waiting for the great pumpkin, oh, no. Oh, no. Mm-mm. Nope.
Well, you know, my knee-jerk reaction to Obama's talking about faith-based initiatives came from the fact that, first of all, I didn't think his words through, but even before that, I know what George Bush meant by faith-based initiative, and so did the guy who ran the operation for Bush, realized it was a massive political scam, got out, wrote a book about it, the title of which is escaping me right now. It's David Kuo, K-U-O, is the guy who wrote the book. And so, you know, to me, faith-based means hush money, street money, what we used to call street money. The union stewards in my old town used to make sure that people had enough money to, you know, take the bus and get to the polling station, whatever. They would spread this money out around among the church leaders, among the shopkeepers, you know, get your people out. So that's all Bush was running, a $1.2 billion scam for these hand-waving, crazy, mostly white evangelical churches, so that the preachers would stand up there and give a Sunday morning service, a sermon to 8,000. When they all came out, they would find, wonder of wonders, they would find little flyers under their windshield wipers telling them who to vote for. So,
hustling for Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of money in the Jesus business, but it makes me nervous.
It does, and here's the thing, too. With I don't know what Obama's plans are. I'm sure that he's got to know what he's up against as far as these church folks, because I honestly think that the crazies, the evangelicals that we always talking about, mm-hmm. I think that they're not, you know, even 30% of the church. They're probably like some small fringe that's just out there. They've got enough numbers to kick up enough dust. But if all the church folks who are not concerned, they don't have a personal interest in Israel. They don't have a personal interest in whether or not Jesus comes back on the 25th. You know what I'm saying?
Well, don't misunderestimate, though, LaShonda, the number of evangelicals. It's my understanding it's the fastest growing segment and has been for the past, I don't know what, decade of Christians in this country. You know, that's what all these big mega churches are about. You get 15, 20, 30,000 member church. That's not a church. That's some kind of a political rally. That's insane. You know, Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. And these people don't pay any attention to that. They're in it for, and you see these guys on TV, black and white. You see them. They're in it for the power, the money, and the glory, the earthly glory that they preach against. Don't you do that. Can I get an amen? But I'm going to do it, amen. So it's the whole thing to me is a massive scam. But don't misunderestimate, seriously, how many evangelicals there are in this country.
If Obama can stay away from, like, the black preachers, like, let me tell you, my family is very heavily into the black church. I mean, the mega church. I got an uncle who's been in the business for, like, years, uh-huh. and I know what goes on behind closed doors.
Right.
And I'm like, ooh, y'all are not out here preaching the word. I don't know what y'all preaching, but that didn't come from Jesus.
That's right.
So, yeah, if he can get in there with some real community leaders, the ones that are there on that grassroots level from the mm-hmm. neighborhoods and work with, you know what I'm saying, get a liaison to work with these people and help them.
Well, one of the most effective organizations to do that is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church parishes in this country, they are faith, but they're also action, and some of the most intense and successful social justice organizations in the history of this country have come from the Catholic Church. So, I don't believe their theology, but I do acknowledge that they get things done. That's why so many of them were murdered in Central America by the CIA, because they were resisting what we were trying to do down there, the Catholic, the liberation theologists, so-called. Hey, I got to leave it there, LaShonda. Take care. Let me know how your career goes in the stand-up comedy, all right?
Yes, I will, Mike. Y'all have a great 4th of July. Have fun.
Okay, dear, you too. Take care. Take care. Stand-up comedian, huh? We have to take a break here, and when we come back, what do we got? Oh, that's right. We have moron sounds coming back. We have two. You got to hear these. George Bush trying to act like, all presidential and stuff. Stick around for that, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Seven past the hour, Nova M Radio. This is the Malloy Program. We have a bunch of open lines here if you want to get in the queue. The number is 800 888-989-1480. And again, a program note, we will be off Friday the 4th of July and then all next week. Sam Cedar and who else? Johnny Wendell are going to be filling in. Friday night will be a rebroadcast of the program in which we interviewed Bugliosi. And then Monday will be Johnny Wendell, and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday will be Sam Cedar. Two quick emails, and then we want to play this Bush sound for you. This is from Kevin in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. Faith-based anything makes me nervous, too. But if you read Obama's bio, A, it will blow you away. This guy was one savvy manager. His opponents apparently never read it on Wikipedia. B, you'll see he did a lot of community work in Chicago in concert with local religious organizations. Time alone will tell if he does it right or simply follows in the vile footsteps of the Bush crime family. But my money and my vote is on the former. Kevin in Madison. Right. And this is from Billy Bob in Tennessee. Mike, I was depressed last night, so I called Lifeline, and I got a call center in Pakistan. I told them I was suicidal. They got all excited and asked if I could drive a truck. Jesus. Wait a minute. Is that real? That's from Billy Bob in Tennessee, huh? Yeah. All right. Chuckle Nuts. After a bunch of boring, lame duck, too little, too late, happy horse hockey about what he wants to accomplish at the G8 summit in Japan coming up. You know, I guess Bush goes there for comic relief. Everybody on Earth knows that we used to be the largest creditor nation on Earth, in the history of mankind, humankind. We are now the largest debtor nation on Earth. We owe more money to more foreign entities than the rest of the world combined. We have an economy that's collapsing. It was declared officially today that we are now in a bear market. That means the bottom is falling out. We have had savings, retirement plans, pension funds wiped off the map. And the dumb little bastard goes to Japan to do what? Make sushi jokes? Sushi jokes? Jesus, it's astonishing. But there he goes. Off to Japan. I'm going to go over there and do some economics things. You know, we'll talk about the economics and everything. Oh, my God. So I had a little press briefing today. Is that what this was? A little press briefing? The dubious decider took a few questions from the press and talked about the increasing chaos that he has created in Afghanistan. How long has it been now? 8 years. Reporter says, Mr. President, June was the deadliest month for U.S. troops in, well, since we began the war in Afghanistan. Has Afghanistan replaced Iraq as the central front on the war on terror? And is Al-Qaeda and the Taliban taking the upper hand? And also, is it possible that we could send additional U.S. troops there sooner than the 2009 date that you've been talking about?
It has been a tough month in Afghanistan, but it's also been a tough month for the Taliban. You know, one reason why there have been more deaths is because our troops are taking the fight to a tough enemy.
Oh.
You know, an enemy doesn't like our presence there because they don't like the idea of America denying safe haven. America is pressing an ideology that's opposite of theirs. And so, of course, there's going to be resistance. I am confident that the strategy is going to work, which is to confront the Taliban, confront elements of Al-Qaeda, and at the same time encourage the growth of a free society by good economic policy, good education policy, and good health policy.
What?
We're constantly reviewing troop needs, troop levels. We're halfway through 2008. As I said, we're going to increase the troops by 2009.
Oh, yeah? Where are you going to get them? Where are you going to get? Where are you going to get the troops? You're going to hire Gurkhas? How about Turks? Hessians? Where are you going to get them? He says, one reason there have been more deaths is because our troops are taking the fight to a tough enemy. An enemy who doesn't like our presence there because they don't like the idea of America denying safe haven. Or maybe the idea of Americans bombing, killing, maiming, and torturing their innocent civilian population? You think, chuckle nuts? And what is this? I'm confident that the strategy is going to work. George, you started the strategy in 2001. We're coming up on 2009. And you're talking about more troops. 8 years. I'm confident he says the strategy is going to work. The strategy, which is to confront the Taliban. At the same time, encourage the growth of a free society. Where? In Afghanistan? Oh, for Christ's sake! They haven't changed in 800 years. And they're not going to change George. How are you going to do that? By good economic policy. What does that mean? Open factories? More yak farmers? Or increase the opium harvest? What the hell are you talking about? Good education policy? For whom? You mean the little boys that go to the madrasas, or the little girls who stay home and don't dare go outside, especially not to a school, and most of them not even to a doctor, because holy jumping Allah! Somebody might see their, you know, private parts. And good health policy? Where does the good health policy come in? What is the life expectancy in Afghanistan, chuckle nuts? Good health policy. Like we have here? Next reporter wants to know what Mensa Monkey will do about the weak dollar and these, you know, kind of ridiculous oil prices. $140 a what? A train load? No? A barrel? The crack White House reporter says, Mr. President, what do you realistically expect to accomplish at the G8 to deal with soaring oil prices and the weak dollar, which are having effects on the U.S. economy? Even the Chinese now are saying that the United States needs to stabilize the dollar. Even the Chinese. People who have play money, the yuan, are telling us, Mr. President, that we need to stabilize the dollar. Well, what about that, Mr. President? Huh?
Well, we're strong dollar people in this administration, have always been for a strong dollar.
How's that
and
working?
And believe that the relative strengths of our economy will reflect that. Secondly, I'll remind people it took us a while to get into the energy situation we're in. It's going to take us a while to get out of it.
Oh, okay.
But one thing is for certain here in the United States,
yeah,
that we can help alleviate shortages by drilling for oil and gas in our own country.
Oh, okay.
And yet, the Congress, the democratically controlled Congress, has refused
bastards
to budge.
Yeah, I hate them.
It makes no sense.
None.
For
what?
To watch these gasoline prices rise.
Yeah.
When we know we can help affect the supply of crude oil, which should affect the supply of gasoline prices.
Hell yeah.
And I'll also tell them it's a tough period for American consumers. I mean, nobody likes high gasoline prices. And I fully understand why Americans are concerned about gasoline prices, but I want them to understand fully that we have got the opportunity to find more crude oil here at home.
Oh, well, that sounds like a plan. Yeah, just go ahead, fly over there to that Japan country and tell them other G8 guys, you know, that that what? That our consumers over here in America are what? Let me think. Let me think for a while.
I can do it better. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest. And I can do what you can do. You never try to do what I do. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest. I can do better.
going past the hour. Email here from, I don't know who, Jenador? Jenador writes, I do listen carefully to what Obama says, and he is shrewder than shrewd. He and Howard Dean are doing exactly what you would desire them to do, more effective than anyone since JFK, perhaps even since FDR. In the words of the recent caller, Obama is reframing the dialogue. In fact, he is deprogramming the nation from the conservative newspeak. The political dialogue needs to change. He is creating a new dialectical synthesis. The fact that the right wing knows that it is facing existential retreat, if not defeat. Just listen to how they are more dismayed by Obama's feints to the center than even the most left-wing alarmists. They know Obama for what he is, the greatest left-wing threat to the conservative hegemony since JFK. Ooh, big words. All right. Back to your phone calls. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the Internet. Hey, Edie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Let me give you a belated birthday kiss.
Well, thank you.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, you know, I was thinking I just had a case of the black ass all week.
Oh, yeah?
All due to Obama.
Yeah.
And with the FISA thing, you know, and I'm thinking, well, so they can't be civilly sued, but the feds can get them when Obama's in office. Well, what makes them think that George Bush won't give every one of them a pardon before he leaves?
Well, there's always that possibility.
Yeah, and who's McCain got with him, one of the Swift Boat guys, Bidet?
Yeah, working on his campaign or his chief of staff or something. I don't know. Just real. McCain is surrounded by real evil bastards.
Oh yes, I don't doubt it.
Yeah,
it was something I do this all the time, and it's just gone out of my head. So it must have been a lie.
Yeah, it must have been.
The Wesley Clark thing, the religion thing, I'm just disgusted. As I think if the government is going to give money, faith-based initiatives,
right,
then the churches ought to pay taxes.
Okay. Certainly at least property tax. But you see, the separation of church and state has gotten to the point where it only works one way now.
The
state stays out of the church's business. The church can get into the state's business if it's evangelical Christian any damn time it wants to.
I know.
And as far as not taxing religious organizations or their property or their incomes or whatever, you know, an honorable attempt that goes back, I think, long before the Constitution of the U.S. in order to keep the priesthood independent, and the priesthood decided they wanted to be independent and would threaten the state. If you tax us, we will raise armies and kill all of you. So
yeah,
in the name of God.
Yeah. But these proselytizing knuckle draggers, they do terrible things. They like to swoop in on single mothers who really desperately need help. And the next thing they know, they're going to church and getting baptized. And I don't remember Christ ever saying, come unto me, the little children, and it's my way or the highway. And they extort the souls of these people because they're so desperate for the help. And it shouldn't be that way in this country. Well, they should be able to get help. I mean, they're running from an abusive spouse, or they've been left and they're just in terrible situation. And instead of having a social worker coming out to try to help them figure out what to do with their lives, like in the old days, well, now they got some damn Bible thumper just coming in and taking over their lives.
That's true, Edie, and that's one of the problems I have with it. There are social sciences. There are means and methods and protocols and things that work. you know, expecting people to sit down at the kitchen table, battered to hell, the children going hungry, the old man a drunk, and sit there and pray to some sky spook to make it all go away or solve it is insane. In the case that we're building here, the woman involved, this imaginary woman involved, the battered woman with children and no education herself, she doesn't need to sit there and pray. What she needs is some real help. She needs a safe environment. She needs some help learning parenting skills, perhaps, or getting her children into a decent school, or making sure they have lunch money, or getting away from the filthy son of a bitch that beats her. And this is where government, in its finest example, can step in. You don't sit there and say, "Well, wow, man, this is really terrible. Let's bow our heads in prayer." No, I'm sorry, you don't do that. We'll be right back.
Listen to Right Wing Radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, let me just throw this in. This is from PJ, who writes, "Dear Mike, correction for Portland Pete. Ahimsa in the Hindu faith means non-injury or non-violence. It is considered one of the qualities of Brahma or God. Gandhi put ahimsa into action and understood that this is what Jesus practiced and taught. Those in the U.S. who honor Gandhi through speech and action and who espouse the nonviolent teachings of Jesus are a handful of Catholic priests who have spoken boldly against the violence of Christianity, claiming the gospel teachings are indeed a call to practice radical nonviolence, and they have backed it up with repeated civil disobedience and terms in prison. They deserve our respect and public attention. Go to soawatch.org, that's the School of the Americas Watch.org, to find the organization one of these priests, Father Roy Bourgeois, founded." Let me digress. Most of the people who listen to this program are very familiar with Roy Bourgeois and that organization. But anyway, another is Father John Deere. Cindy Sheehan appears in a film about his practice of non-cooperation and nonviolence entitled The Narrow Path. Two others are Father Steve Kelly and Father Vitale, who were released from prison a few months ago for opposing torture at Fort Huachuca in Arizona. Their story is on tortureontrial.org. And yes, most nonviolent priests practicing civil disobedience in the U.S. have worked with the nonviolent priests in South America, a number of whom have been murdered. According to these priests, Christianity has been hijacked for the past 1,700 years. I'm not a Catholic or Protestant, but I recognize that if we want to cultivate so-called salt marches, these are the leaders. Yet, sadly, their sacrifices are rarely covered in progressive media and never in the mainstream media. PJ, yeah, we cover the School of the Americas quite extensively every year. Probably not as much as I should. The arrest of old nuns who are sentenced to 6 months, 8 months, 10 months in prison for demonstrating for human rights and so on and so forth. And I've said many, many, many times on this program, while I totally disavow the great spook in the sky mythology, I have a lot of respect for the liberation theologists who have operated in Central and South America for decades, because they are an absolute contravention of the Church of Rome. They tell people, no, you don't have to live wallowing in poverty and sickness and disease and 8,000 children simply because Rome tells you or the Pope tells you that your reward will come after you die. You don't have to do it that way. There's a better way to do it. Do it now. Do it here. This is how you do it. So, yeah, we're real familiar with that. But thanks, PJ. I appreciate Appreciate you checking in. Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening on the Internet. Hey, Charles.
Hello, and belated happy birthday.
Thank you, thank you.
Reading of all books, as I want to do repeatedly, Harpo Speaks.
Yeah.
Sincerely, the most spiritual book I've ever read.
Harpo Speaks.
Yes, by yeah. Harpo Marx.
Yeah, right. Well, it's Marxism. Right, I understand.
Yeah. And is talking about his childhood, and then it's probably the only autobiography that talks about the genuinely carefree, if not careless, days of the early 1920s.
Uh-huh.
And it dawned on me that this is really, because you're always asking, what will it take? What will it take? Nobody's really concerned unless it affects them. It's like, you know, the founders of the nations that we fought a revolution. That, what do you mean we? It was the vast majority were in fact the Tories.
Mm-hmm.
Unless another stock market crash or something of that ilk, which affects the upper 5%, are harmed, it won't change. Because throughout the 20s, I mean, people, working people, were not playing with the stock market. It was a toy of the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing some of that happening now with the mortgage crisis.
Oh,
was somebody like Ed McMahon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who stands to lose his house too?
And you know,
I'm not laughing about Ed McMahon losing his home. The sardonic laughter. But yeah, I agree that until the top echelon, the top 2 or 3% of Americans are hurt and hurt severely, you're absolutely right. It's not going to change, Charles. It's a game to these people. Charles, thank you. I got to move on. It's a game to these people. The hedge fund operators who do nothing but shuffle numbers back and forth and steal from the rest of us and take a huge chunk of that theft and put it in their pockets, and the rest goes to the players, the big players, the people who can plunk down $200, $300, $400, $500 million in order to screw the rest of us to the wall. People like Limbaugh, who are paid $400 million for the next 8 years of propagandizing the entire country by spewing out lies and calls to violence. That's how goddamn sick this country has become. A pig like Limbaugh should be put up against the wall, not paid $32 million a year with a $100 million signing bonus to do what? He is a lying, foul, disgusting, drug-abusing proto-Nazi. And corporate America is willing to pay for this son of a bitch to get out there every single day and spew his garbage every single day. This is what corporate America loves. Go get him, Rush. Go get him. So when that top 5% gets creamed, slammed against the wall, maybe something will happen, but I'm of the opinion that why wait until the top 5% gets creamed or slammed against the wall? Why don't we cream them? Why don't we slam? Who is going to cream them? You mean if they lose all of their money? If they lose all of their wherewithal to continue to play their games that destroy this economy and any economy globally, it doesn't make any difference. These are the sons of bitches that are driving up the price of oil to $140 a barrel. It has not a damn thing to do with supply and demand. Demand is down, way down. Supply is constant. Then why has the price gone up in 10 years by a factor of 8, 9, 10? Because of the people who play games. Just like the Enron. Remember the Enron thing where California all of a sudden had an energy crisis? And you remember Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these filthy, rotten bastards talking about how, well, it's because they don't have any power plants. You know, the environmentalists, the dirty, rotten environmentalists. That's why. Limbaugh gets paid $32 million a year to spew this garbage out. And then we find out it was deliberate on the part of the Enron energy traders to divert and withhold energy from the people of California. Remember the tapes? Remember the conversations? They were so vile and so filthy that it killed Ken Lay. May he burn in hell. This is what these people are about. This is what America has become, this huge sucking sump hole where the top 1 or 2% game the rest of us every single day. How much longer are we going to put up with it? How much longer? How much longer? Huh? Until, as I said before, you hear the squeaking of the tumbrils and you know that the Axeman is setting up in the town square. How much longer? What is it going to take? Because the sons of bitches are leaving us no alternative, are they? Huh? Isn't that awful? Isn't that awful? The institutions and mechanisms that the founders set up in this country were designed specifically to avoid what the French went through, for example, although it came later, the terror, to avoid it. Every change in government does not have to have with it a bloody, violent upheaval. That's what the framers said, more or less. Just follow these rules. Here's a republic. See if you can keep it. So here we are. How much more? How much, you know, and that's not a rhetorical question. I think about that every day. How much more are the American people going to put up with? And maybe we haven't put up with anything. It is the disparity. That's the part, I guess, that is so horrifying. 90% of us struggle. On some level, we're struggling. Another 5% are not struggling. They're solidly in the so-called middle class. And then the top 5, 4, 3% just feast, eat everything that we do. They eat from it. They feed from it. Like the pig Limbaugh. They're like massive, massive hogs at a trough, eating, devouring, taking in everything they can get their hands on. And it's never enough. Never enough. More. But on the other hand, maybe the lifestyle of the so-called middle class in America, with all the anxieties and the fears and the collapsing this and the collapsing that, maybe it's some kind of a, I don't know what, message, warning, payback, karma. I don't know. What is it? What do you think, huh? What do you think? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your phone calls. Thanks to Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, our podcast manager. The creative force here. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy. All under the firm and maternal hand of our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Oh, and don't forget, on Friday, Besta Malloy, the Bugliosi interview. Johnny Wendell on Monday, and Sam Cedar Tuesday through Friday next. Because we are We're going to lay low for a while. And Nova M founding members, don't forget, you can now see the weekly videos of your humble and obedient servant. That would be moi. All you have to do is log on to NovaMradio.com and click on videos, you know, member, what does it say? Does it say members or something? I don't know. And watch as I read some of the more entertaining emails that we get. And you never know. You know, one of these days I'll probably come up with something really bizarre to put up there. Maybe I'll just strip. I could do that. I could do that. But there's a new one up right now, so go check it out. All right?
But you are, there's no full Monty in this version.
They did it in the movie. Lee is calling from San Diego, listening on the internet. Hey, Lee.
Hi, Mike. I heard you talking about those people that secured the tax cuts from Mr. Bush and all their millions, which just aren't enough. So they needed those tax cuts, and they needed to be sunsetted so that the sunset go away.
Mm. Yeah.
It's never enough.
No,
I'd like
never.
To say I'm really happy Ingrid Betancourt is free. Very, very happy.
No, wait. The woman being held in Colombia.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I got
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
She was there for, what, 6 years?
6 years. And I'm thinking about this today, and I'm thinking, I wonder if this rescue was delayed for McCain's arrival, just like the Iran, you know, hostages release was delayed till after Reagan took office.
You know, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. I don't think it happened that way because the McCain campaign or media or somebody would be drawing the link, saying, well, you see, and nobody's doing that.
Her release overshadows the little man that McCain is. I think
that's
they
true.
Would do it. I think, I don't think, I can't put anything past him. I think it's always a possibility.
Well, I agree that her release overshadows anything McCain could have been doing in Colombia. But, I listened deliberately and specifically to a couple of newscasts tonight because that was like the lead story. It was a big story.
Right.
And no mention of the McCain element other than it wiped out the publicity that he was hoping for in going to Colombia. So that's
because it's just too big a story for him.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Mentioning Howard Dean before, how I love and miss him.
Yeah.
The media deep sick. It sixed him after he told them, you know, Chris Matthews, that he was going to stop the media consolidation. I sent you an email, OrwellRoseInHisGrave.com.
Yes.
That is a very good, very good thing. Try to watch it, and particularly the outtakes.
Okay, I'll do it.
And Obama and the amendment to FISA, is there going to be an amendment vote after the holidays? I'm kind of confused on this.
I'm as confused as you are. I don't know what the deal is. I know that the Senate vote comes after they all return from the 4th of July recess. I don't know if the vote is going to, if there's going to be any amendments offered. Obama, I believe, I may be wrong on this, but I believe Obama has said he will make an effort, he and Chris Dodd, I think, and a couple other senators, to strip out of that FISA bill the retroactive immunity for the law-breaking committed by these telecoms. But I don't know. I have no idea. The other hint or clue or element that's been added kind of obliquely is Obama saying, or not Obama, but people in the Obama camp trying to defend his support of FISA, saying the FISA bill as written by the Democrats eliminates the possibility of civil cases but doesn't eliminate the possibility of criminal cases.
Right, and on Oberman's website he has a piece where he talks about Dean looking at this, John Dean, and Dean said that that same thing, but the only thing that would happen would be Bush could pardon him or pardon the companies, but in order to get a pardon, you have to admit guilt. But what the hell? So what? So,
yeah,
so
really.
What if they admit guilt? They could still be pardoned.
Sure.
So, hey, have a good time.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in, Lee. You too. Take care. We got time now. No, we're just about out of time. I was going to take Mike in Golden, Colorado. I'm sorry, Mike, and Jackson, and Steven, and who else is up there? But we're just flat running out of time. So rather than put you on for 30 seconds and then... one last email, Tim from L.A. Mike, I'm a founding member, and I saw your uncensored video because I know I needed to laugh before I saw the waterboarding of Christopher Hitchens. The Hitchens video is maddening. I teared up when I saw what happened to Hitchens, but came to the realization that it stopped after 17 seconds. The Iraqis, the poor Iraqis, no wonder they want to kill us. No wonder they would rather commit suicide than live in the hell we created. I say we because it seems no one cares what happens. Sure, there are truth seekers, but we're considered kooks and terrorists ourselves. God, I hate Americans. Tim from L.A. Tough stuff, Tim. I certainly understand. Thanks a lot for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.